Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. This afternoon, my guest is Lisa Phillips, and Lisa is the founder and author of The Artistic Edge.
Hello, how are you?
I'm just fine. First of all, The Artistic Edge is both a book that you've written, and it's a company, yes?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, let's start with the mission of the company. What would you say your mission is?
Well, the mission really is about highlighting the importance of arts education and preparing young people for their life after school.
Gotcha.
So really focusing on all of the incredible things that are learned through the arts aside from the artistic skills themselves and
yes.
How that prepares young people for life.
You know, I'm happy to hear that. I did teach actors and in New York, but they were professional actors and doing commercials and theater and on-camera work, television, etc. But I always enjoyed, and I'm sure was influenced in my career, by the chorus teacher in high school and in middle school, for that matter, although way back then we didn't call it middle school, we called it junior high, but also the drama teachers and whatever, and I was never a good painter or such, so I married one, but I'm happy to hear, because I always felt that the arts are the first things that are cut in society's budgeting, and the Great Recession was just a great excuse to cut into that again. So let's talk about why it's a bad idea to cut out the arts. I mean, I know one of your quotes is, when children are successful, the world is successful. What do we need to take from that?
The kids are really our future. And if we're not equipping them with the skills they need to be successful in 2015 and beyond, we're looking at a society that's got a slippery slope and a bit of an uncertain path. So I really see the arts as an ideal vehicle to teach children so many key life skills, leadership skills, you can call them whatever you want, that really are crucial. I've seen so many kids just growing up unprepared for the working world.
Yes.
And there needs to be a major shift in what we're doing and how we're preparing them for life. And I think that the arts is a great vehicle and it has so many natural links to leadership skills that we're not seeing all the time, and that's really the focus of what I do.
Yes. You know, I used to tell when I worked with younger people in theater piece or even a video. When I first came back from New York, my parents' health brought me back. I got a job at a middle school, which was the first time I'd been in a classroom situation as a teacher. And we created, with those kids, videos, a video department, a morning news show. Of course, we did lots of theater and so forth. And I sort of worked to get the band and the orchestra to co-op and chorus to cooperate with each other and with us. And
we created this department, and one of the driving forces that I think is exactly what you were saying, that the arts and just the performing of it, the rehearsal, the preparation for it, kind of is a microcosm of the world. So you have to get along with people, you have to work together for a successful conclusion. So how does that fit sort of the philosophy of the Artistic Edge?
Yeah, it's 100% dead on, and that's really what I love that you did that, and I wish more people were doing that and really saw the value in it. It's all about all the skills around the art-making process, whether it's putting on a show or a visual art exhibit or a music concert. There's so many skills there that if educators really focus on reinforcing them, whether it's confidence, the ability to, you know, persevere, to be able to be focused, if educators really reinforce those skills as they're doing it, the kids would get so much more out of those experiences, and those are skills that they need as adults. If we can't persevere, if we don't know how to communicate with each other, if we can't receive feedback, if we don't know how to be dedicated and take accountability, and there's countless others, we will not succeed in life.
Mm-hmm.
So the arts is such a, it teaches all of those things and many, many more, that when educators and parents really can actually make those links, and that's what the focus of the Artistic Edge does, mm-hmm. is to make those links and draw those comparisons. When we do that, the kids are not only learning incredible creative skills, but they are also developing key life skills that they must practice when they're young so they become proficient at it when they're older. Okay. And that's really what makes someone stand out in a job interview later. When someone has those skills, we notice and we're like, wow, this person really is super confident and really has a solid head on their shoulders. And we notice those things.
You know, I'm glad there was a lot in there that you said, but you brought in the parents and the educators, because the Artistic Edge they go to the parents and the educators to provide them the resources they need to help children, teens, young adults to reach their potential. So that we don't leave out the adults. We sort of bring them in and give them the tools they need. And when I say we, I mean you, the Artistic Edge, yes?
Yes, for sure. And it's really all about what the adults are doing. If children are not successful, it's our responsibility.
Gotcha.
From my viewpoint, it's our responsibility. So I'm seeing, I ran summer camps for a decade.
Gotcha.
Art-based summer camps. So I have firsthand experience at interviewing teenagers and young adults in their early 20s for jobs.
Wow.
And to see how they're coming into an interview and how they carry themselves and know how to sell themselves, 90%, 95% of them are really unprepared.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of work to be done, and it's really our responsibility as the adult to give them what they need.
And the Artistic Edge helps the adults to do that. They give them the tools so that they can help pass it along to the children, and the children go up and be leaders. I know there's another quote of yours, arts plus leadership equals success. Tell me about that first, but I have another question I want to ask you soon. But arts plus leadership equals success. What's that?
Really what that's about is life is very competitive. And I know there's a lot of philosophies out there about, you know, not making things too competitive for kids. It's hard for them. The reality is the world is a competitive place. And if we don't create a safe space for our children to explore that competitiveness, they won't be able to handle it when they're older. So arts plus leadership equals success is a formula where we're focusing on creativity and the creative aspects of what they need to be able to survive in the world and contribute to the world in a positive way. It's all about creativity, no matter whether you're becoming an artist or working in business.
Mm-hmm.
And the leadership side is all of the skills that I talk about in the Artistic Edge. So when you have those aspects, your likelihood of success is that much higher. Mm-hmm. And I think there can be a competitive nature even within the arts themselves. And from my viewpoint, especially when the adults control that well, it's a good thing for kids.
Yes.
It's good. So that's really what that quote is all about.
You know, that leads right to the question I wanted to ask you. When first your name and the artistic edge came to my attention, you need to talk to Lisa Phillips, they told me. Okay. I thought I was going to speak to an artist, and that was wonderful. I love artists. But you are that, but you really are not just talking about a career in the arts. You're talking about a lifestyle, a right brain, left brain compatibility, if you will. You are talking about using the arts as a means to learning how to deal with people, how to get along, how to communicate civilly, how to develop relationships, and how to be a leader in society. Is that putting too fine a point on it? Or
no, that's 100% correct. And you are correct. I am an artist, mm-hmm. as well as all those things. Currently, I'm a competitive Latin and ballroom dancer. I train in Latin and ballroom dance, just like on Dancing with the Stars.
Wow.
And I was actually at a competition this past weekend. And one of the skills that I talk about in my book, The Artistic Edge, is adaptability and how the arts is a key vehicle to teach the skill of adaptability. And I use dance as an example. Mm. Because if I'm doing a cha-cha dance or salsa or rumba, I don't know, it's not choreographed, I don't know what my dance partner is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I have the signals and I learn to adapt to what is right in front of me, and I have to be able to think on my feet and change course. And if I don't understand the lead that my dance partner is giving me, I have to figure something out. I can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way life is. So as an artist myself, I live that every day. So for me, the artistic edge is really about communicating those natural links to leadership and life skills that are there, just embedded in the arts.
Wow. How can the arts prepare young people for working in the world? I'll tell you what's behind that question. We are trying to develop, especially people like you, develop young people into leaders of tomorrow. That makes sense. We're also, with the arts, of course, we specialize in communication, because that's what the arts have to do, and we do it creatively. So, and I'm not saying necessarily better or more than other professions, but artists have to communicate creatively, period. That's a given. And I guess as we work together as artists, we learn ourselves and teach others how to problem solve. But my biggest question I want to throw at you is, because I go through this still. I had a meeting last night with an amazing young man in his 20s, incredibly knowledgeable and an entrepreneur of all design, artistic design, etc. And when he explains things to me, I'm wondering, oh my God, we live in an age, it seems to me, when our technological devices have the potential for turning us into, let's just stick with America for the moment, a nation of solos, I say. And what you're saying is, no, we've all got to get out there and reach out to one another and make it all work, and some have to be leaders and others team players or whatever. But how can the arts in particular prepare young people to work in a right brain world? How's that?
The importance of creativity in a lot of ways. I mean, there are seven skills I talk about in my book. That's one of them.
Uh-huh.
And it's really about creativity, because for me, it's not about a young person growing up and saying, I want to be an artist.
Uh-huh.
If they do, that's fantastic.
Yes.
But it's really about the creative skills that they gain from their arts experience that helps them succeed in the working world. IBM did a study, and Ken Robinson, who's very well-known and great
yes.
advocate of arts education and creativity, you know, talks about this and said that IBM did a study about from CEOs around the world finding out what are the top skills they need for new employees entering the workforce and
yes.
into their companies. And number one was creativity.
Mm-hmm.
So when we know how to be creative and how to take an idea and turn it into something that is a useful product or a service to sell or how to communicate a marketing message, all of those abilities come from being creative.
Uh-huh.
And we are inherently creative, and this is, I'm sort of paraphrasing things that Ken Robinson has said, we're all inherently creative, and it gets educated out of it.
That's
what he says,
right.
And I agree.
Yes, it's true.
So if that's a big part of it, you know, is preparing them because that's what actually is needed in the working world.
A creative artist. As you say, because I've said this too, when my artistic friends claim that area as only belonging to the artist, I say, no, anyone who creates something, be it in business or whatever profession, is a creative artist. Now, I would like, for instance, just to throw out, and then when we're going to take a break and we'll come back and talk about the 7 skills in your book, but I'd like to see this start at a very young age. I'd like to see the arts get as much focus, attention, time, value as, say, a sports program in a school. But at the same time, I think the point is that a creative artist can be a corporate, it can be an attorney, it can be I've taught attorneys acting on camera because they came to me saying they needed to work on their voir dire and being personable and all that sort of stuff. I think I lost my train of thought. Why? I tell you, let's do this. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back with my guest, Lisa Phillips, who both is the founder of the company, The Artistic Edge, and the author of the book, The Artistic Edge. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little more about the book and why she wrote it, what inspired that, and the 7 skills in that book that children need to succeed. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. We came across Butter in a local film festival. We were very lucky, as its 1 week in theaters certainly didn't gain it much attention. Jennifer Garner stars as Laura, an ambitious Iowan with an I'm better than you core, naked political ambition, and, shall we say, a metrosexual husband. One can't help but appreciate the politically satiric wink toward those who remember Michelle Bachmann. The plot is overly simple. Laura's husband is a legendary butter carver, winning the state fair competition so many times in a row, it's time to step aside. This development horrifies Laura, who sees his celebrity as central to her ambitions. So she will step in, win the competition, and rise to new heights. Of course, this won't be so easy, given the emergence of a child prodigy butter carver and the entry of Brooke, played by Olivia Wilde, a scene-stealing hooker owed money by Laura's husband. The value here is in the pervasive offbeat humor. Often close but never mean-spirited, this tongue-in-cheek tale is smart. Maybe too unusual for the mainstream and lacking the depth of those serious indies, this butter is slathered on thick and it's darn good. Butter. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Find us on the web at indiefilmminute.com.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando, and my guest today is Lisa Phillips. We have been talking about, growing up, you know, becoming leaders, learning how to be the best possible adult we can be in every sense of the word. Lisa has written a book called The Artistic Edge, and she is the founder of a company by the same name. But let's start with the book now. We've talked a bit about the company mission and all of that, but what about the book, The Artistic Edge? You say it has 7 skills that children need to succeed in an increasingly right brain world. Remind us, first of all, what's that right brain, left brain? The right brain are the people who...
are more creative.
Yeah.
Generally is the school of thought, and, you know, there's lots of... philosophies and theories and scientific research on whether there really is a left and a right brain in terms of one side being more analytical and one creative. So that aside, it's really just, you know, know, that concept of the importance of creativity.
Yes.
That's really the right brain side, yeah.
So what inspired you to write The Artistic Edge?
Well, what inspired me was a few things. I was working as a camp director, so I was running arts-based camp for about 10 years, and I was seeing a lot of young people coming in for job interviews and not being prepared.
Mm.
And we infused a lot of leadership programming into our arts camp. So we were naturally, we had leadership programs and lots of things we were doing with the teenagers in our program to develop their leadership skills. Uh-huh. And I started really seeing the connection between the arts and what we were doing and the leadership skills that were being developed.
Uh-huh.
And I was inspired to write a free report, which I did, which people can download off the website, which is theartisticedge.ca.
Okay.
And I wrote a free report called 10 Skills Children Learn from the Arts That Help Them Succeed in Life.
Oh.
And the report got a lot of interest. It was published in the Washington Post, and Americans for the Arts posted it on their blog, and it's sort of been shared all over the world. And it really just sort of inspired me to share my message and share my thoughts, because there was a lot to say, and
yes,
it wasn't being communicated always in terms of all the skills that the arts teaches. So I thought, why not write a book?
Exactly. Good for you. Give us that website again slowly.
Sure. It's theartisticedge.ca.
C-A, as in C-A.
Yes.
Okay.
As in Canada.
You got it. Okay. Well, then, why don't we talk about some of the skills that are in the book that you feel children need to succeed?
Sure. I would love to.
All right.
So the first one, number one, is creativity, and that's something that we've been talking about already on the show quite a bit.
Yes.
And, it, you know, that one's really about just, this is the way you stand out. You know, when you can be creative, when you can contribute in any type of industry.
Yes.
Creatively, you're really contributing, you know, in a high-level way.
Gotcha.
A lot of it has to do with, you know, second skill talks about confidence.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, fear can be such a hindrance to success. And
yes,
there's so much confidence building that happens through the process of the art. So that is a key one as well.
Yes.
Next, I would talk about is problem solving. And the way I sort of see it is all art making is solving a problem.
Yes.
So every time you need to, you're drawing a painting, you're creating a piece of music, you're putting on a show, there's an end result that you're looking to achieve. And the challenge is, okay, how do I get there? How do I go from point A, which is nothing, no creation yet,
yes,
to the end result and the final product? So there's so many transferable skills on how do you find solutions to things when you're, you know, doing art making. The next one really focuses on dreaming big and the idea that anything is possible. And it is those people who can dream and create that can change the world.
Yes.
So art making and the arts is just such a huge vehicle to allow kids to explore that idea that they can be anything, they can be anybody, and they can achieve anything they want.
Yes.
So they really get that chance to dream through the arts. And we need dreamers in the world, because that's what makes things better, and that's what Jesus thinks. So the next skill is really about accountability.
Uh-huh.
It's really key that we as adults, our children, everybody really needs to increase our accountability for what we do. And our making, especially ensemble-based work, is so fantastic at teaching that.
Yes.
And the idea that, you know, if you are in a music ensemble, for example, you are accountable to your entire orchestra.
Exactly.
For showing up and sitting in your chair and knowing your part.
Yes.
So there's so many countless ways that the arts teaches that skill of accountability, and just building relationships with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are not on this earth alone.
Yes.
We are here as a society, as a group, and it's the relationships that we have with one another that really allow us to further our purpose and achieve what we want to achieve. So we need to, you know, be accountable and, you know, learn how to develop those relationships with each other. And that really leads into, you know, the next skill, which is communication.
Yes.
And, you know, you mentioned it earlier in the interview that, art making is really about communication. And
yes.
I love that. And that is just everything. It is communicating. It's expressing ideas. And we do that in every type of art form. There's so many ways that, we do that. And, you know, you talked about everything being very digital these days.
Yes.
And that is very true. And, we are losing a little bit the artist, even with all this fantastic technology, we're losing the art of conversation. You know, the chapter in my book, and you can actually download this specific chapter for free on my website, you know, it's called They Text, They Tweet, But Can They Communicate?
Exactly.
And that's, you know, that's something that is, you know, we really need to focus on communication skills as a society.
Yes.
It's very, very important. And the last one is adaptability. And I spoke about that earlier with my own art form as a dancer and
yeah.
doing competitive Latin dance. It's all about being able to adjust and think on your feet. You know, the world is changing so rapidly, and if we cannot adapt, we will not succeed.
Exactly.
We need to be able to, you know, take control of things and not be the effect of what is going on around us. So that requires, you know, a lot of skill related to adaptability and being able to just think on your feet. And dance is a great avenue to teach that, as well as things like theater improv is
sure.
like one of the best ways to enhance your skills of being adaptable. So those are the seven.
Yeah, that's terrific. But I hope people will still visit the website and will buy the book. How can we get the book, by the way, The Artistic Edge?
Yes, the book is available for sale directly on my website.
Okay.
So they just go to www.theartisticedge.ca. It's also available on Amazon online, so you can, you know, you can pretty much get it on any of the online stores. And if they go to the website, there's a lot of free resources they can download as well.
Fantastic. As we get closer to the end of the show, we'll ask for the website again so everyone can get reminded. So if you didn't get it, get your pens and be ready. But I remember now what the thought I had lost at the end of the first segment. Something that you and the Artistic Edge, as both book and company, are doing that I think is like a subtext, subplot, if you will, that I find extremely valuable. And I wonder if you're seeing it on the surface or below the surface, or is it happening? Here is where I'm going with this. We acknowledge, you and I, that there are creative artists in every field, and it is those people who are the dreamers and moving us forward as a people, as the human race. My concern is, as artists, we can look at the business world and fit in. We adapt. We bring those skills, whether we're practicing our primary artistic career or our life's mission in other ways. What we've learned from the arts, if you will, even if you never have an artistic career. So how about from the other side? Are we getting, I know corporations, there are some corporations where philosophy doesn't include the arts, and there are others who give millions to the arts, and there are those who come to the, to fight for the equal rights of people. I mean, so corporations, first of all, corporations are people, not, I don't agree with Citizens United, but they're not people in that sense, but we think of corporations as these unseen buildings, and really it's the people inside of them. Do those people acknowledge, do they need something like your book, The Artistic Edge, to realize that people in the arts can make a contribution not only to the world, but to their corporation? That's my question. Does this educate the other side of the equation too?
That's a great question. I think, you know, you're going to get different responses from different companies. I think the smart companies understand the importance of creativity. If you take a company like Apple,
yes.
which is a computer company,
sure.
they are brilliant in marketing, brilliant on the creative side of what they do, and look at how successful they are. So they're a company that's really embraced that artistic side and look at the results that they have.
Yes.
So I think the smart companies do understand that. And, you know, I've studied a lot and learned from some of the, you know, amazing experts in the business world.
Yes.
And, you know, some people will say all founders of companies are artists.
Yes.
They are the people that are dreaming the dreams for their staff and their team to follow. So there is that natural connection there.
I think so.
And that IBM study also indicated that. So if a company is smart, they really are understanding that link.
You know, because I think, again, as I said, one of the, whether it's a conscious choice or intention or not, I believe your book and your company are spotlighting that connection, that bridge. I mean, I know that in some ways that's stating the obvious, I know, but I don't know that everybody realizes that that bridge exists and that the artists can reach across, but so can the business person, and they really find out they really are very much the, you know, we are the same people looking for the same things and building and imagining. So what is the great importance or contribution of the arts in society? I know that's a big question, but to justify what you're saying, I guess. Let's do that. You don't have to me, but maybe there's someone out there listening that you do.
Well, I think the great contribution is creativity. It really is creativity, and I mean, if we're talking about just art making's sake,
yes.
You know, there's nothing like a beautiful piece of music that stirs an emotion or communicates an idea, same with an art piece, same with dance, and same with theater.
Yes.
And we, as a society, all cultures, you know, whether it's Western culture, other cultures, we have so much so many stories and so many things that are shared through the art forms that we have, and it is one of the key ways in which we communicate.
Yes.
So for those who maybe don't necessarily see those connections, I take it back to a company like Apple and
yes.
See how brilliant that type of marketing is. Well, that only comes from creative people.
Yes.
And where are you developing that skill of creativity? Largely, not entirely, but largely through the arts. And that is a great way for young people to hone those skills.
Yes.
And grow up to be a marketing executive or a CEO of a company or, you know, anything, whatever it is. So that's what I would say.
Yes.
It's communicating. Art is life. It's communicating life.
And, you know, I guess that tells us also one question I had on my mind today. Who among us is best qualified to maintain the arts in the world? And now it's an incomplete question because of the connections you have made here today between art is not an isolated thing. It never has been, never should be. I need more people like you who know that, you know, and don't treat them as two. They're not even opposite sides of the same bridge. We're intertwined. So the answer to the question, who among us is best qualified to maintain the arts in the world, we have to add, and through the arts to create new, is we all are. If we get the right kind of nurturing, and like you're talking about, yes?
Yeah, 100%, yeah, absolutely. It's everyone's responsibility. And we all enjoy a good movie, we all enjoy a great piece of music, and my purpose at the Artistic Edge is really to show it's more than that. It's more than just that brilliant score from a film. It's taking... There's so many other elements that come into play, and what is gained from those artistic experiences contributes to the world in a much more crucial way than maybe we always realize.
Uh-huh.
So that's really what I I want to be communicating through talking with people like you so we can share that message.
Yes. One last thing, just to be a bit of a devil's advocate. Why, you know, because we've talked about, okay, corporations listen to us even though you throw money at us sometimes. But now back on with the artist, how does the artist, the creative artist, do that? How do they make the connection? Because I think there's a little, I think sometimes actors, at least, I know very well, wear as a badge of honor the starving artist. Well, I don't think starving is a badge of honor. So how do artists accept prosperity? You know what I mean? Create a beautiful thing, but it's okay also to prosper from it as it embellishes someone else's life. Is that a question?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that topic, and I could talk for hours on it. I think the idea that of the starving artist is a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes.
The art community puts it there.
Yes.
And the reality is, I think it's nonsense.
Yes.
That people earn an amazing living in mm-hmm. the arts.
Yes.
I think anybody can. If they are not, it's because there's something that they don't know
yes.
about creating income from their art form. The reality is they are very good at their craft,
yes.
but they have never learned the business side of the art.
Yes.
And I always say that all artists are entrepreneurs, and
yes.
the majority don't even realize it.
Well, that brings us back to the importance of your process. You are helping young people, but you are doing so by going to the parents and to the educators and saying, these are the resources, this is what you need so that you can train those future leaders. Because, as you say, I mean, even when I was graduated, and I won't name the school, it's a very famous university, but when I was graduated, I will say Peabody, loved Peabody, enjoyed my time there, and enjoyed my time in two graduate schools, too. It's not that I didn't enjoy it. But nowhere along the line did anybody suggest that I should learn how to write a resume or do an mm-hmm. interview. And yet when I teach on-camera acting in New York City, it's always the last 2 days of what it was a crash course of 10 days, 5 days, weeks, so we learn all of the talent, the technique of that, but also how do you market it? We didn't just come here to make ourselves feel good. We want the public to have a positive response to us, but we also want to share in the prosperity of society by sharing our gifts with it. So let's do the website one more time, and then we'll go out on your response to what I just said. What is that website?
The website again is www.theartisticedge.ca.
And what's the last thing you want to leave with us on after what I just said, or whatever you want to say? Your last parting thought.
Yeah, I think artists really are so key to the world and creating new things and contributing to and shaping society.
Yes.
So I really, in terms of what you just said, I really would like to see artists understanding that they are an entrepreneur, that their art form should be shared, and that they deserve to have an income from that art form. And
yes.
if they're interested in learning how to do that, contact me and we can talk about it.
All right. Is there any other contact information that you wish to share, email, or do they get it all on the website?
They can go to the website. They're also welcome to send me an email. They can send me direct personal email. That's no problem. It's lisa@theartisticedge.ca.
Okay. All right. We've been talking with an amazing creative artist. That's all I can say. Lisa Phillips, founder of The Artistic Edge and also author of the book by the same title, The Artistic Edge, sharing with parents and educators the resources to help 21st century children, teens, young adults reach their full potential. Did I get it, Lisa?
Yeah, you got it.
All right. Thank you for being on the show, and I wish you truly all the very best with what you're doing, because you not only have the talent, but the guts, you know, to get it done. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye now.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Andy Film Minute. Depicting life with all its subtle nuance is no small feat. Keen observation and deep appreciation of human nature are essential to the purpose. And we can be thankful that writer-director Ira Sachs holds these qualities as we enjoy the unfolding of his lovely film, Love is Strange. Ben, John Lithgow, and George, Alfred Molina, have been a couple for 39 years. They complete each other. They have good friends, love the arts, and relish the moments of their lives. With times changed, they decide to make things official. Their relationship was never hidden, but marriage proves a bridge too far, and Ben loses his long-held job within the Catholic Church. Living abundant lives, but without wealth, this loss of income leads to a loss of their home. Ben and George are taken in, separately, by friends. Deep poignancy is experienced as this perfect whole of a couple is separated into two incomplete halves, searching for a way forward. On one level, this elegant story reminds us of the difficulties experienced by those in the winter of their lives, especially those without abundant resource. But more than that, Love is Strange shares with us a moving portrait of humanity in all of its beautiful imperfection. Love is Strange. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Corporate PACs projecting poison on planet and people. It's not necessary to be in love with a person to find some areas of agreement and common experiences, like NSA spying victims, underemployment, unregulated Wall Street banker-caused recession, and our First Amendment of the United States Constitution guaranteeing all Americans the freedom to be stupid or informed, the freedom to be an inhumane bully or give a voice to the voiceless, the freedom to be a billionaire terrified of gullible consumers transforming into informed voters, or to champion the unity and equality of human rights, civil rights, women's rights, and voting rights as one. Whether faith or politics, earth steward or climate denier, ostrich or prophet, the needs of humanity, power grids, infrastructure, and the earth have reached a level of urgency with strict time limits, and those resisting an American renewable transformation tend to also be those against much of what is good for Earth and its human inhabitants. However, there is one universal mantra they chant: no matter how we vote, who we marry, no matter what color or gender we are, they're just not that into us. We don't matter to them. The world's population is consuming more food and water faster than the earth can produce it. And when supply and demand intersect the crossroad of scarcity, who do you think will be the first served life-giving water? And who, left to die fighting in the streets over an aluminum can of artificial sweeteners? The connection between California drought and an ocean encroaching on Florida beaches is clarity. Climate change denying is energy apartheid. And with our ballots, we must unite against governors, state legislators, and Congress for being unfit to govern. Want to occupy something? Occupy this. 1. Even Bangladesh is installing solar panels at the rate of 70,000 a month. 2. Fracking and Keystone Pipeline have united cowboys with Indians and farmers with ranchers against both. 3. Americans use more energy between midnight New Year's Eve and noon on January 2nd than the continent of Africa uses in a year. The World Health Organization reports there is massive migration in the Pacific as people race against death by climate injustice. But Western corporations create new climate refugees every day.
Who is it that insists oil dependency and fossil fuels are better for America's financial, physical, and mental health than farmers and communities creating their own renewable free energy from corn cobs and running it on batteries? Who is denying our weather has changed dramatically for millions of Americans, and global warming, whether due to climate change or not, will enslave our next generations, if not deny them, their very existence? Who's fighting against the Clean Power Plan, an extension of the Clean Air Act, and why? Historically, America's energy sources have evolved. Wood to coal to oil, natural gas, nuclear power. Why not in the 21st century take the next logical step to solar and wind energy? Answer: fortunes will shift from Wall Street boardrooms to Main Street rooftops, and corporatism's cokeheads are petrified at the potential loss of their power over us. This, not patriotic fervor, is why billionaires like Norman Brahman and Sheldon Adelson spend tens of millions of their free speech to squelch our free elections. Now, hold these truths to be self-evident. A. In revenge for the 1960s civil rights movement, we've inherited inequity in housing, incarceration, and food deserts. What do you think those born in 2001 will inherit? B. There are fewer gangsters on our streets than in the suites on the street. C. All our social and financial issues erupt from our insatiable rape of earth, water, air, and food chains. If keeping a job is so important you'd continue to work for the very company polluting your family's drinking water, then consider the employment opportunities available to us if, instead of investing tax dollars in corporate welfare for recession-creating too-big-to-fail megabanks, we the people invested in transforming America into a social energy-powered superpower, controlled by local communities instead of corporatism determined to dominate government at all levels and puppet string 99.9% of all Americans, regardless of whether you are a Republican, a Libertarian, a Democrat, an Independent, whatever. The most essential advocacy for Americans in 2015 is to connect the dots connecting us, for truly all roads, pinched prosperity place, police state street, gun violence highway, mass incarceration avenue, voter intimidation interstate, and bullies boulevard, all lead to disappearing Florida, Midwest tornado destruction, and California drought. Around and around we go, and where we stop nobody knows, on the climate injustice beltway. Our solutions for social, financial, and employment challenges begin with our ceasing our denial of climate change. For the cry of Mother Earth is increasingly urgent, and it will be too late if we leave it to our grandchildren to dry her tears. Joining an all-inclusive climate advocacy, we can recharge America and power up all Americans. Visit www.peopledemandingaction.org and join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.